There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have you along. Another hour for us to hang out. And the phone number and the text line, they're the same. 343-0106. 343-0106. Also with the FM Talk 106.5 app, right there when you're on the, what do they call it, landing page? The front page of the thing that comes up when you open the app. If you look at the bottom there, there's some icons, and the one in the middle has got a microphone. If you will press that, lets you record a message, and then it emails it to the show, and we can play it back here on the air. So yet another way to get through. Remember, check us out on social media. We're on really busy on Facebook. Leanna does a great job there. Also, check us out on Twitter. I occasionally update things over there, or X, and even Instagram and YouTube. Check us out there as well. All right, the waning days before Election Day. Have you heard? Maybe the last commercial break reminded you that we have municipal elections coming up on Tuesday. And speaking of Mobile municipal elections and in the city council realm, the incumbent, District 1, City Councilman Corey Penn joins me. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Sean.
It's, you know, I said it's been too long, so we'll get you back in here, you know, if you win, we'll get you back here with some regularity. So let's talk about this. This is in... I remember last time we were talking about this, you wanted the job.
That's correct.
You got the job. What do you think about the job?
I love it. It's an honor to serve my community. Of course, been in my community from different capacities, from a special ed teacher to director of the Boys and Girls Club to student pastor, and now I'm serving as a council member. And I have been enjoying every bit of it, just being able to be involved in our community, create change, adding playgrounds, putting $3 million in investing in the community. And so it's just been an amazing opportunity to serve in this capacity.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. So you talking about what you do inside a district, and I've talked to many of your cohorts in the city council. You've got this money, and it will come back to some other, but it's interesting to see if you can work with other districts. I think I was talking to Josh Woods the other day.
Yeah.
I was like, and he was talking about a drainage issue or water issue. I'm like, but that was also something that they were working on in 7. Y'all talk about that. Like, if your district abuts another district and there's something, like get CIP money and pull, like, hey, we could do this together and go half and half here.
That's correct. Yeah. So we have a big problem. My district abuts District 2. Mm-hmm. And so certain issues and challenges we might face together. And then we can come together and utilize our funds to tackle that issue.
And so y'all both doing it separately. I just wondered, like, you know, if you work, you're like, okay, listen, I can come up half, you come up half, and we get this thing done.
That's correct. Because a lot of times the challenge is it's not, I mean, yeah, we break the districts up, but a ditch doesn't carry what district is in,
right.
But it crosses both lines.
Right.
And what happens in one particular district could affect what happens in my district, how the water flows. And so we have to tackle and we have to look at that issue and work together to solve it.
Because it's one thing to think about, you talk about playgrounds and big citywide arena projects, and they're great. Y'all get out there, you got the big giant scissors and cut the ribbons or the chrome-plated shovels, and I get that. But the day in and day out things are maybe not as sexy, right?
Yeah.
It's drainage, it's infrastructure, but that's real important. I mean, you can't, you know, I always tell my kids, you can't ice a cake until you bake it. You got the stuff underneath, you got to get done.
That's true. You know, we recently just did a project, the underpass on O'Shea Road,
mm-hmm.
and that was major. And a lot of times what happened was we still were seeing the flooding issues.
Yeah, well, people said it looks beautiful, but it's still getting water.
So recently we put $1 million in drainage and infrastructure, and they went to O'Shea Road and took a camera to see exactly what was taking place in the pipe. And it was a gigantic root, a tree root that was blocking the drainage.
So that's why it was.
It was flooding. So now in the last hard rain, it didn't. Now we're crossing our fingers.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and because it's still, of course, how that the O'Shea Road underpass is designed is below sea level, of course. But it was a gigantic root that was blocking it, and we just cleared it out.
And I've said this, I think everybody from council who's come in here, I've said this too. What I want y'all, I want y'all to tell people more, like you're telling me, and I think that I'd have had a picture and a video of that thing, say, hey, y'all, and maybe you put it through a newsletter, but I mean, get to all the media, like, y'all take a look at this tree root.
Yeah.
I mean, because people wonder, they go, I don't know why they did this and it's still flooding. You know, we don't know what you know.
Yeah, I totally agree. And so I share that information, and I think we have to do a better job in marketing and communicating. And that's why I'm grateful for you, Sean, and I'm grateful for other organizations that push this information out, because it's hard. Everybody's not watching council meeting. Even if I'm watching, even if I post a video that talk about an issue, let the news pick it up, or if it's not controversial, if it's nothing bad. It's not spreading, even when you do something good.
No, and that is true. And I'm not going to say, well, the media, I'm part of the media, and I get it. If there's something controversial with council, then we talk about it more. But I think if you give us something easy to hang on to, like here's a root that's like an A plus B equals C.
That's correct.
I can't speak for other people in the media, but I would grab onto that and say, hey, y'all, you know, you've been driven crazy by this thing still flooding. Here's why.
Yeah.
You know,
like, and I think that's also working with the administration, because a lot of times from a council member, we're not there when they find it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're getting the information when we get back and we're like, hey, we found this out. Did you get a picture of it?
Yeah, because people need to see why.
Yeah. And so that was one of the first things I asked. I was like, hey, I wish we would have been able to see it. But I think Mobile, we all have to do a better job in telling our story from that standpoint to even selling Mobile. So all that is a part of sharing and communicating the information to the public. And I think we can do a better job. So I agree.
Okay. And this is great. We get all seven of y'all to be doing that. That'd be great. Let's also talk about things that are citywide, not just in District 1. Yeah, people ask, we've got this arena post here. I mean, we need an arena. People worry about legacy cost on this. You know, I mean, I never built an arena, so I don't know how much they cost, but it's pricey.
Yeah.
So do we, because I feel our city is healthy from a fiscal perspective, but I worry, you know, how many more projects do we do? You know, how many more things can we grow beyond that we're then just servicing debt all the time again?
No, I think the city is in a great position to tackle this arena project. In 20,
we can pay for it.
We can pay for it. In 27, 28, we'll be done with our legacy debt that we already have. We in a great position. And then we can move to tackling other issues and challenges. And I think this is something that we needed to do. If we want to bring tourists, bring people into our city, we have to bring entertainment. We have to have the best artists in the nation coming to the city of Mobile. And I think this is going to bring the opportunity to have those type of artists coming to the city, visiting. We got Amtrak. We're going to have the International Airport. I think it's just going to be a major impact to downtown, to the city of Mobile, to the community. And people, in the end, they will enjoy it, and they're going to see it, even from an economic standpoint.
Yeah, and I don't know the exact numbers, but another one of your fellow councilmen, Ben Reynolds, had said to me before, I was trying to figure out how it worked, and he said, I don't have the details, but that OVG has a dog in the hunt, and I liked it. Like, there was a profit incentive for them to make sure that people were there and making money for the arena.
Yes, it's a buy-in. Like, they have to, it's a part of the contract.
Like, they can't just sit there and get paid. They got to do something.
Yeah, so most times you have people that you pay them to manage, and they have to do something to see results, to get paid.
Simple, right? Yeah, I mean, they can't just say, well, yeah, we're managing it.
Yeah, and then you have Live Nation, who's a part of it, who they already have the artists signed to them, the largest entertainment company in the United States of America. And so when you have those combinations, it's just a great a success situation. So I'm excited about it. I think it's going to be a great opportunity for the city of Mobile. I'm excited to not have to travel so far to see great talent. And now people can experience right here in Mobile.
No, I like that too. And I want to talk about this also citywide, but I just had the forum with the mayoral candidates last week and talking to them. And of course, the number one subject that I hear about here is public safety.
Yes.
And the four mayoral candidates had their different, some I'd say 80% aligned on public safety and dealing with crime, maybe 20% difference between the candidates. Your thoughts on, are we doing everything we can? What should we do differently? How do we stop this? You know, people say, well, this other city has higher teen, I don't live there. It's too much. What do we do?
One of the things I do, I think we got to work on prevention and making sure that we're providing resources to our community to, from the standpoint of putting things in place. If you already know that, okay, a person is, you know, is likely to commit by basically, you know, if they're dropping out or they're already in Strickland at an early age, why not put a system in place to work with that those individuals? And I think that we can do that. I think we can put more resources from that standpoint to create that. And I think community police
resources like programs,
so job opportunities, trade programs, finding out what the kid would like to be a part of, mentorship. So you take a kid that's 12 years old and they're in Strickland, why not find something that they already love, you know, from a trade and bring that mentor in and give them an opportunity to talk to that kid, give them a job, you know, give them a trade. I think a lot of times, and even for me, we was pushing the 4-year university and we got away from trades. Mm-hmm. And if you right now go look at it, it's so hard for to find an electrician, to find a plumber, to find all these different trades. And some of those kids, you know, you keep telling them, oh, you got to go to 4-year university. I don't want to do that.
Right.
How about giving them an opportunity to work with their hands, which they still can make a lot of money, and give them that opportunity. So I think we have to learn how to find other ways to reach those individuals that are having challenges. And so I think also community policing, I think having that relationship with the community is vital. I knew the police officers in my community.
Mm-hmm.
So now you feel comfortable sharing information, talking to the police officers, building that trust again. And I'm seeing them doing it. I'm seeing our officers now knocking on doors in the community, introducing themselves. They're having basketball games.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're going toward the right progress, and I think we just need to beef it up a little bit.
Yeah, I think about community policing from this aspect, that building those relationships or having a presence gives somebody the security, because I've always thought about it. I got a lot of friends in law enforcement. I said, y'all are there, and when you're there, that person's safe. But if they're giving you information about a bad guy in their neighborhood or whatever, y'all's shift is over and you go home and that person's still there. Like, to build that trust that if we help you and tell you who the bad guy is here, that you're going to take care of me too. You know, that's because police can't always be sitting outside somebody's house.
That's correct. And I think that's the piece, is that if we share that information, what's the plan? How are you going to utilize that? What can we do as a community to help the police? And I think that's the thing too. Like, what can we do as well to make sure that we stand up against any type of violence, mm-hmm. any type of thing, any criminal activity?
Just as a community, if we can say, that is not okay.
That's it.
That's not okay.
We're not standing for it. Yeah, we're not standing. We're standing together. It's not police against community. It's community together. And I think that's community policing, doing it correctly. And so I think we have an opportunity to do that. And I look forward to working with our chief of police, our public safety director, to make that happen.
Good stuff. People want to get more information about you and the campaign. Where do they go?
So you go to votecoreypenn.com. You also can go to any social media platform and just type Vote Corey Penn, and you will see all my information. And I would love to have your support on August the 26th. Vote for Corey Penn.
There you go. He closes out strong, guy. Good to see you, Councilman.
All right. Thank you so much.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right now, 124 FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Good time right now. I'll get to the text line in a second here, but I want to check in with my buddy Ron at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. And you're like you called this, I guess, on Wednesday. We were talking about what might happen with interest rates and what Jerome Powell was saying. And then we talk about what equities and what that would mean for precious metals. It looks like that's happening today.
Yes, sir. And he didn't even announce the cut. He just said it looked like their cut was due. Or
right. You know, yeah, he just kind of like he didn't. You're right. Y'all remember like the news report said he didn't come out and say we're going to do it. He just said it could happen.
Yeah. So, I mean, but they're just the stock market investors and silver investors and whatnot have just been waiting for that kind of news. So for a while, silver was well over $39 an ounce. It dropped back to 39 right now is what it's trading at. It was positive for silver, too. Silver rose about $30 to $33.75. So good news for the markets. Platinum and palladium are favorite underdogs. Both rose a little bit. Palladium, not much, rose $5, and platinum rose $30. So because stock markets respond good. But, of course, like we were talking the other day, if they lower interest rates, make cars more affordable, new cars start selling them faster, and, of course, they got to buy more palladium and platinum to make those catalytic converters. So that's a good reason to put some of that into your portfolio too.
And maybe have both, like over time. You're telling me like if they're making them, let's say they start making them out of platinum, for example, because it was a little bit cheaper, they do that and then the platinum price goes up, then they go over to palladium and back and forth.
Exactly. Yep. They only have to retool a little. It's not like a huge expense, and once they've done the retooling once, they just put that on the shelf and wait until they go back to the other variety. Just because the metals are obviously the molecular structure, number of atoms, all that jazz is a little bit different, so it takes a little bit more of the palladium to make the catalytic converter than the platinum, so they have a little bit different tools to map out the honeycomb they make with that product.
How do you know all this stuff, Ron? Ron, how do you know all this stuff?
Just over hanging with Angelo Semifero all those years helped, but I mean, I've been doing it since I was a kid. But Angelo was a bookworm, so every time we got into something, he would learn everything he could about the metals. You know how Angelo was.
And, right.
Yeah, he had all that stuck in his head, so it was a good guy to hang around with.
Yeah, I've said this so many times. Not only a great place to pick up precious metals, gifts, jewelry, open L knives, and all that, but my Lord, I've gotten education from you over the years. People can do the same when they come in and they say, hey, man, I'm just like I did early on. Like, I know nothing about precious metals versus there's people you talk to that know a lot. If somebody wants to get your opinion, your education on that, how do they find you?
They can come to 2204 Government Street in Midtown Mobile. They can go out on the web and look us up. It's MobileBayCoinsPlural.com. Or just give us a call at the shop at 251-725-1590.
Hey, thank you, Ron.
You're welcome, Sean.
All right, there goes Ron at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Got a couple texts here before the news. Plus, my buddy Mike Bunn is going to join us here shortly. End of this month, Fort Mims massacre, the reenactment happened. It went last year, too. So last year's my most recent. But we'll talk about that and some of the tours they give as well. Let's see. I think this is the end of last hour. My gosh, I've been remiss. Sorry. Michael says, I don't blame Tony Kennan, for not talking to Rob. He's obviously been more than happy to have his publication be a tool to take down Kennan, but now he's going to attack Erica Thomas and call her a garbage reporter. You have to admit he is not trying to be fair. He didn't call her a garbage reporter. Some of this stuff, Michael, I mean, some of the stuff you're talking about, we could just disagree on, right? But some of the things, that's not right. You said you have to admit that he's not trying to be fair. I don't admit that. Says he's throwing out any and all mud he can without a shred of proof. There's the reporting here. The things that they report on Atlantic app came up in Erica's interview as well. So I don't know that he's guilty. I'm not on some, track to say it was him hitting it, but there are a lot of questions to be asked. And Rob talked about all the other things we've heard over time about the rides in the police car and this and that. I haven't been focused on that. People can decide what they want in Orange Beach. That's y'all's decision on who's going to be mayor. But when there's an allegation of domestic abuse like that, then yeah, you got my attention. I think questions need to be asked. Chris in Orange Beach. Hi, easy question that's not being asked. Could there have been a third woman there? I'm just saying. Yeah, see, Chris, I don't know. I don't know any of that. I mean, it's a question, but unnamed texter here. We're fortunate to have both 1819 News and Landyap. And I agree with you, texter. Let's see. Oh, this is going back to the conversation about the Trump rally, which is y'all go read John Sharp's story over at AL.com. He'd get me back in trouble. David says, what I remember about the Trump rally in Mobile is that FM Talk 106.5 ran out of Naaman's food at the tailgate. I don't remember that, but there's a chance since there's about, I don't know, 500 of y'all in our tent. Okay, coming back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 135 FM Talk 106.5 in Midday Mobile. 343-0106 gets you through. And now I want to check in with my buddy David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars. And he let me call what we're going to talk about today. So here we go. David, I want to talk about trucks.
That's all you ever want to talk about.
Well, okay, yeah.
We got plenty of them, though, thank the Lord. We do really well with trucks, not just because we're in Theodore. I mean, we sell trucks to people all over Baldwin County and Mobile County, and Mississippi as well. We've got quite a few Ram crew cabs with the Hemis in them. We've got, I think, four Silverados, a couple of Sierras that are all crew cabs with the V8s in them. And we've always got I've always got Ford crew cabs and extended cabs, anything from the EcoBoost on up. Now, we do have a really nice crew cab Colorado out front we just got, and we have a Toyota Tacoma crew cab out front and a Nissan Frontier crew cab. So we got a good variety of trucks. I mean, small, large, whatever you need.
Okay. So people want to check those out, tell them how to find you.
We're on Highway 90, 1 mile south of I-10, exit 15A. You can give us a call at 251-375-0068. Or go to the website. Everything should have pictures. It's lcmmotorcars.com.
Thanks, David.
Having a good day.
All right, you too. There goes David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars. And without further ado, he is director of Historic Blakely State Park. He is also author extraordinaire of some of my favorite books about local history. And he gives a heck of a presentation in person as well. And he's a nice guy. Mike Bunn from Blakely State Park joining us now. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me again, Sean. Good to talk with you.
Good to talk with you as well. I do, and we'll talk generally about some stuff going on at Blakely, but, you know, I didn't know. I thought about getting you. We always talk this time of year. I said, you know, instead of talking to you next week when it's closer to the event, there's this Mobile thing. If you do things way too early, then nobody hears you. If you do them too late, they've already made plans. So I'm trying to hit this sweet spot today to remind folks about the Fort Ben's Massacre reenactment. Do you think I hit, I mean, people, what do y'all think?
Is this the right time? I think you're right on the money.
Okay, good.
I think you're right on.
All right, tell people what you and I are talking about, this reenactment, when and where.
Up there at Fort Mims, they do a reenactment of the Battle of Fort Mims, which, of course, is a really big, important landmark in regional history. They do it every year near the anniversary of the date when it occurred, which is August 30th, back in 1813. And we are partnering with them, we being the park, to run some special history cruises. Got three different cruises that we're running, all of them at least twice, different routes at different times, helping people explore the area of the rivers up there, the Alabama River in particular, and just learning about how those waterways in that region figured into what they are interpreting with that reenactment.
So last year, y'all, so I was on this last year and absolutely loved it. And I will say this, I think I'm being honest here. For somebody that doesn't have a ton of knowledge about Creek Indian War and the Fort Mims Massacre, it's still, they can still participate. You tell the story in depth. And if you're, let me see, what's the term? If you're a nerd like I am about Creek Indian culture, the Creek Indian War, it is fascinating, y'all, because you can go see the reenactment, but Mike shows you where people fled, how they got across the Delta, where the canoe fight would have been, all these things. I got to have you point right where it happened. It just blew me away, man.
Yeah, we had a good time. I appreciate you coming up there with us last year, and we're going to do the same thing again. And there's a variety of sites that are really important in regional history, from the original route of the Federal Road to the area where settlers, as you said, fled down to Fort Stoddard. We talk about the importance of that area. This area is set right on the international border at the time. And there was a pretty big war happening, and it was a focus of what was happening in the United States for a brief moment. And we tried to take you up and down those waterways, give you a little bit of context, and point out some actual sites.
Yeah, it is amazing. The international aspect of it, you and I have talked about many times. People think, well, yeah, we're good old U.S. of A. Well, back then, you had these European powers that had claimed area. You have the Americans and being cut off from the coast at some places, and you have a fledgling United States of America. You have European powers that then probably, if they would have wanted to, could squash us if they brought their entire might. And then you had Native Americans being pitted into this battle as well. It's all happening. It's not happening a world away or in North Dakota. It's happening right here where we live.
Exactly. This was the focal point of one of the most important contested areas internationally in the entire country at this time. And it's a much more complex story than discussing it as settlers versus Indians would have it. The Native Americans were both taking various sides on this. The settlers saw it different ways. The European powers saw it different ways. And they do a great job at the reenactment, helping you parse through all that and helping understand what really happened, the real significance. And our cruises are designed to complement what they're doing and give you another way to explore the area.
Yeah, I mean, we comboed it. And I'll tell you this, like I said, if it's for everybody. So I have my son with me, who, I mean, maybe some interest in this has rubbed off just having me as a father, but he didn't have a ton of interest in it until the reenactment started happening. And now we have, you know, we have gunshots going off. We have, yelling, people taking cover, raids happening. I mean, he was absolutely engaged, which I thank the reenactors for big time.
Yeah, they do an excellent job. They really know the history. They help bring it alive and kind of get you engaged. And in addition to that, there's great vendors and there's good food, and it's just a good weekend. And we're happy to partner with them on that, telling that important story.
Now, we'll continue the discussion, but no time that I talk to Mike about this is ever complete without me asking him the same question every year. When are we going to get a movie made about the Creek Indian War? I mean, when are we going to get this done?
I got to write a good script, man. We need to do it because it's definitely a story that's worthy of Hollywood for sure.
I mean, you know, I've talked his ear off, not on the air about this. I mean, if y'all know anything about this, the visual of this would be just amazing. And the characters, think about the characters here. I mean, Hollywood, they're always looking for, you know, a complex character or something like that. From the American side, from the Creek side, you got them here.
Oh, you do. You have one of the chief instigators of the attack, the Native American attack on Fort Mims, was a guy who had European family and his own family, some of them sided with the Americans. And so you've got this really complex moral drama playing out on multiple sides. So, yeah, it would be perfect to develop a pretty complex character to talk about a really significant era in American history, no doubt.
Yeah. Also, I just found this out. We're talking about your books, and we're going to go tell people where they can get your books when we finish up. But our buddy David said, Mike's book about the era, Fort Stoddard, and you and I were talking about that, I think, last time or time before you were on the show, is now available on Amazon and Audible as an audiobook, as well as anywhere you can get audiobooks online. Did you voice your own book?
I did.
Yes.
I used some of David's equipment, and he set me up, did the editing, and we've got that out on audiobook form now.
Okay. Let me say this. Can you, everything that you do or have done, please put in audio form, because the way my life is, this is just, y'all hold on, audience, tens of thousands, y'all hold on for a second. So, because I'm pretty much bush by the time I lay down at night. I mean, I read like a page or two before I fall asleep, but I got all kind of time on a lawnmower and a tractor, and I consume, please, more of your stuff in an audible form. It'd be great.
Well, I'm going to try my best to get them all out there. Some of that's up to the publishers, but that Fort Stoddard was self-published, so we had the discretion to do what we wanted to with it. But we try to get them all in audiobook if we can.
By the way, if you're looking, once y'all, hold on one more time. If you're looking for a studio to do this in, I know a guy. Has some radio studio.
Yeah, he's
got them.
Yeah, you do.
Let's, outside of this, once again, if somebody, well, first of all, if they want to go and take part in the cruise before and the reenactment, talk about getting tickets.
BlakeleyPark.com. Go to our events page. All of the cruises, both for that day and for everything that we have for the next several weeks, all is listed there. We take all of our tickets for that online. So blakeleypark.com, go to the events page.
And you're doing it Friday and Saturday, right?
Friday, Saturday, and we actually have one or two on Sunday. They wrap up midday because they do a reprisal of the reenactment on Sunday. So we run some cruises in the morning before we take the boat back to Blakely. So we'll be doing some cruises on Friday night, Saturday, and then Sunday morning.
Okay, let's talk about the taking the boat back to Blakely. I mean, here you got this beautiful park. You know, you've got the history of it. You've got the camping, the hiking, the mountain biking, and then y'all are putting people in a boat and taking them all over the Delta as well. I mean, this is. Just over the last decade, this has grown big time for y'all.
It's a big part of what we do, and I always tell people that our boat basically allows us to interpret the entire Mobile Tensaw Delta and the bay as a part of the park in some ways. But it helps us put the context to all the stories that we tell. So being mobile and being able to go all around these areas is a great way that we help people explore the area and help them understand the history and how it all relates to our core stories.
There you go. You'll check it out, because there's this tour we're talking about coming up for the reenactment, but there's so many other tours out there and so much history going on. Now, before we wrap up, the books, like we just talked about, and I mean strong S on that plural, books. If they want to get your books, where do they go?
Well, just about everything that I've written is going to be easily available on Amazon. Local bookstores like the Haunted Bookshop and Page and Palette sell them, Barnes & Noble. I've got my own website. If you're interested in the full run of everything, go to that, and I can get you a personal copy. But most of what I've got, most of it's available through major university presses, and it's pretty widely available, but check your local bookshop.
All right, good stuff. Mike, as always, I appreciate your time, and I can't wait to see you soon.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
All right. Y'all go do that. I mean, if you have just an inkling of interest in our history around here, go see the Fort Mims reenactment. Go on the tour with Mike beforehand. See where these things that were the biggest story of the day in their time took place right here where we live. All right. Go do that, and you will not regret it. Coming right back. More Midday Mobile news next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, so welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Friday. Well, fine, Bob, about 10 minutes from right now. I do have a second here. We got this earlier, and thank you to Leanna and Dalton for getting me part of the press conference from Pascagoula Police Chief Terry Scott, talking about the deadly morning at Ingalls Shipyard here and involving people from Mobile. Let's grab a few minutes of that. This was from earlier today.
I want to praise Ingalls Shipbuilding and all their crews to separate 8,000 people and get them in sections where we could work through this and locate the shooter, which worked out very great. So if you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
Chief, can you identify the person in custody? Has he been charged?
Well, he hasn't been charged yet. We're interviewing him now. I can identify him. His name's Curtis James Jr., 25-year-old male from Mobile. I don't have an address yet, but I know he's in the Mobile area.
Do we know exactly how he was able to get onto Ingalls Shipbuilding with a gun?
That I don't know. I'm sure Ingalls Security will come up with something with that later, but I have no idea how he got on with the gun.
Where exactly the yard did it happen?
It was on one of our Navy ships under construction. I don't know the name of the ship, but it was one that was on shore near the water, and it was.
And were both of these men employees?
Yes, sir. As far as I know, they were both employees. The deceased, I believe, is from Pritchard, Alabama.
We're hearing also that potentially this may have been some kind of dispute over romance, over a woman or romantic partner. Can you confirm any of that?
I can't confirm any of that. I know that there has been a disagreement between the two men, and that's about as far as I can go with that at this time.
You mentioned the one deceased. Do we know of anybody else who may have been injured during that time?
No one else was injured. This was between the two young men.
And have you released the name of the deceased yet? Is it nice of him to identify him?
I haven't released the name yet. I know Sister's aware of it, and his brother-in-law. I'm not positive about the mom. Lots been going on, so I'm not sure if she's been notified, so I will not release that name at this time. Once she is, we'll put it out there.
Were you able to find the weapon? Do we know if it was a handgun, if it was a longer rifle? Do we know anything about the weapon at this time?
I would doubt it was a long gun, but we have not found it yet, and we're working on that still. The shipyard was locked down. We released the lockdown around 10:14 a.m., but we're still out here working this, and we'll have other resources later to try to locate the weapon.
And can you disclose what kind of positions these two men worked in? What kind of things they did?
I believe they were painters. Not positive, but it was around the paint department. The paint department was the one that gave us great information to get started with this.
And has the family been notified, the victim's family?
I know part of the family knows, and I would imagine the mother knows, but I don't know that for a fact, so I don't want to put his name out yet.
Chief, do you know how many shots were fired?
As far as I know now, that I know of, is two.
Do you know where the victim was shot?
I'd rather not say on that. I will say it was two rounds that we know of.
Rachel, go ahead.
I was just saying, do you know how long they had worked here and how long they had worked together?
Well, there's a lot of information we had to get out here and get and jump on in an hour and a half and get this wrapped up. I never got to that point where I knew how long they worked here. I was lucky to find out it was painters.
Where did you end up able to capture, get Curtis into custody? And was he, was it a fight back in any way? Was he cooperative to go into custody? Kind of help us understand a little bit.
Yeah, well, no incident. Like I said, Engel's done a great job getting the groups and smaller groups, making it more manageable for us and a lot safer for their employees along with us. And it worked out great. We took him in custody with no problem.
Chief, in your experience, have you seen anything like this happen before in your city?
We've had shootings before in our city, yes.
But a shooting at such a big employer of your city?
There has been one before here, and that was many years ago, and it was similar dispute, and it was taken care of rather quickly also.
Okay, so there's some of that pressure from earlier today. Once again, Pascagoula police confirmed one person dead after that shooting at Ingalls Shipbuilding. Police arrested suspect. You heard the police chief say it there, 25-year-old Curtis James Jr. of Mobile. And it's a story that, started lighting up first thing this morning. And even though, obviously, Ingalls nearby, so many people from here work over there. But we'll watch this story and get you updates when they come our way. All right, from the text line here. By the way, I read this text here. So Doesn't Have Meta sent me a picture of a redrawn Cracker Barrel logo with Trump in place of the old man there leaning on the Cracker Barrel. I like the fact that they got themselves in trouble. So Leanna got on it yesterday. But to give you an idea just how my brain works, big stock moves, for tens of dollars I've done here lately. Tesla, Elon Musk got himself in big trouble buying Tesla. Cracker Barrel gets themselves in trouble. You buy Cracker Barrel. So I don't know. See if that's going to be my GameStop move here to do it. Yeah, the Cracker Barrel thing, I think this stock comes back up. Somebody was asking me about it the other day or yesterday. And they said, well, what about the food's not good? I haven't eaten there in years. I don't know. I think it's a brand. The new logo, they still have they have that peg jumping game, and they have pancakes and apple fritters or something like that. I mean, this is going to be the death of Cracker Barrel. Although somebody did send me some link that there's going to be a expose coming out, something behind the scenes at Cracker Barrel. At that point, I might have to dump the tens of dollars of stock I have for Cracker Barrel. Somebody texted in here, go woke, go broke. What is woke about it? They changed their logo. I don't know how that's woke. I really don't. I'll take that one into the weekend and mull on it. Maybe it comes up on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors tomorrow, but I wouldn't hold your breath. Y'all have a great one. Paul Feinbaum on the way next.